Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to, hey, Great Shot. This is the Great Shot Podcast, a Crack Rackets and Tennis Channel Podcast Network production. My name is Alex Gruskin. On today's show, we continue our College Contender Series, previewing our top 10 men's and women's teams entering the 2022 season. It is scary to think. Illinois is going to play Ohio State on January 22nd. That date is less than a month from when all of you listeners are hearing this podcast. We are inching closer and closer to the start of the dual match season. With that in mind, hope all of you have caught our latest series on the Cracked Interviews podcast. We are trying to interview each and every Power 5 men's and women's tennis head coach before the start of the year. We're not only picking their brains about what's going on campus, but we're talking to them about the big picture issues in college tennis as well, talking about things like the role of the fall. When should the NCAA individuals be played? How do we best market college tennis moving forward? And of course, most importantly, how do we continue to grow this game we all love? Of course, you can find all of those episodes both on our website, crackrackets.com, and on the Cracked Interviews podcast. Of course, if you've missed any of the episodes in our College Contender series, you can find them all here on the Great Shot podcast feed. You can also find the work of John Parsons and Matt Stachowiak on our website, crackrackets.com. With all of that in mind, we continue our countdown. On today's show, crazy to think we've hit the number 4 team in our women's preseason rankings. And look, we've mentioned this on so many different podcasts throughout the course of this series. The margins are ultra thin at the top of college tennis this year. That extra year of eligibility just accentuating that continuing improving depth we see across the country. It makes these conversations that much more enjoyable. Of course, it also makes this exercise that much more difficult moving forward. And if you're going to undergo something like this, you better have some help along the way. I am so grateful to have had help throughout this series by the man joining me on today's podcast once again. Of course, you know him best as a writer for our website, crackedrackets.com, a writer for his own blog, No Ad, No Problem. Of course, you know him as JTweetsTennis on Twitter, the only man to listen to every episode of the Power 5 series. It's our friend John J. Parsons. Jay, hey, great shot. Welcome back to the show. You're a returning champion as always. Don't think I forgot. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Gruskin. Thanks for having me again. I don't have any intro for you. I noticed that Chris and Matt did. I think they were just trying to one-up me. But I'm doing well. I you're right. I haven't missed any of the episodes yet. I really powered through, no pun intended, the coaches' interviews this weekend. Some good stuff. So you're keeping those, churning those out. So really good listens.
I appreciate that. To your point, I appreciate you coming on these shows because you're right. Matt and Chris are feeling competitive. I think they feel like their seat is up for grabs. They know they've been replaced on the weekday non-college contender GSP by you. And so they brought out the intro. It was a good intro. I was like, you always forget. And, you know, there's this, I don't actually think it's a real perception, but I like to make fun of Chris on the show. Chris and I really do love each other quite clearly, but every so often every so often you forget how smart he is. And then he does something like that. And I'm like, oh yeah, there is a brain in there. I'm like, that's pretty funny.
Yeah, it was really good. I mean, the rhymes were very impressive, right? They were like difficult words to rhyme with. So very impressive. Well done to Chris.
I will say this, the unedited version would have gotten us canceled. So shout out to him for showing some restraint as well. That's for the Patreon listeners.
And for having, you know, two variations.
Yeah, exactly. There were multiple drafts to this intro. Right. That's hilarious. But of course, no, it is great to have you back on the show. And obviously, I know you're doing some really cool non-college contenders writing about college tennis that listeners will likely have read by the time they hear this podcast. Again, you can find all of Jay's work both on our website, crackrackets.com, or of course, on the No Ad, No Problem blog. If you are a college tennis fan, you should be reading everything he says. Although you should also know, and obviously you see the episode title, we're talking about number 4 UCLA today. I get accused of bias. Stanford sweatshirt, Jay. Don't think I didn't see it. Bold wardrobe choice today, my friend.
This is my go-to outfit for the football games during the fall season. It gets a little nippy at night. I thought I would throw this one on for you.
What's nippy at night there? 64?
It can get high 50s. But when it's dark out, that's chilly. But we're also we've gotten some rain. It's been difficult these past few weeks.
Yeah. Well, on behalf of half the country and perhaps people globally who are listening to that statement, f*** you, my friend. But no, of course, it is always a pleasure to have you on the show. And as we always do, we've got our opening tangent here for all of you listeners. And look, we talk so frequently about ways to grow the game here on this podcast. It is always worth applauding efforts that are being made to grow the game, and hopefully we'll have some really fun announcements for all of you listeners about the 2022 season. But it's worth mentioning, and this was from Bruce Wachuk. We're, you know, recording this podcast Monday, December 20th. That's the day he tweeted this. Coming soon, one location to find all college tennis dual match schedules and results. We are collegetennis.com-teams. Now, we have been so fortunate here at Cracked Rackets to have a friend by the name of Chris Halliores, and of course through the years Bobby Knight has done this as well, two people who have tried to provide this for college tennis fans moving forward. But this is an essential ingredient to consolidating and growing the game's fan base moving forward, because we talk about this all the time, Jay, and I know this is a small victory. But one of the most difficult parts of being a college tennis fan is how difficult it is to follow all of the action. There are 100 different live scoring feeds plus 100 different live streams of individual courts to watch. And unless you know where to find them, unless you know how to, you know, travel through that maze, it's difficult to get started as a college tennis fan. This is one step towards alleviating that effort. Yeah, I think it's worth, as always, applauding the ITA, who they hear what we're saying. They are trying to make these moves. And has it been slow but sure? Yes, but we're at the sure part. I think this is one step in a couple of things I know they have coming.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw the tweet. I'm intrigued to see what it looks like. I think you're right. I mean, you and I follow college tennis as closely as anyone. And I couldn't tell you what are the first few dual matches that are kicking off in January. You know, you literally would have to kind of go through each of the respective rosters to do that. So I'm curious to see if this is replacing kind of the way that the screenshot was framed, is you would like type a school in and you would see their schedule and results, I'm assuming, which makes it easier to then probably link to another school, right? So it saves that kind of bounce tabbing between these respective schools' schedules. So I think that's baseline. Really excited for them to bring that. I do think the format that we want to be able to get to is a clear understanding of like, what are the dual matches that are coming up? What's on the schedule? And what are the times? Who are the ranked teams? So Chris and Bobby have done stuff like that in the past. And clearly, if you're going to onboard all the school schedules, then it's more about just kind of like presenting that information, right? And really doing just kind of the inverse view of like, hey, on January 15th or on January 22nd, these are the schools that are playing. This is where you can find the information.
Yeah, and there are things outside of the ITA's control, which is what you learn more of as you get into this game further. I don't know how else to refer to it. But look, in terms of ensuring every court across every match across the country has an updated score throughout the course of the match, respectfully, that's not an ITA thing. Like, of course, they will do everything in their possible to find, make it one location to find all of those scores. But part of that is, you know, again, glitches in the system. Part of that is just line judges failing to update something or something, you know, is malfunctioning in the scoreboard. Those are all things that you hope get better over the time as the technology gets better over time. And talking to friends at PlaySight, talking to friends at Track Tennis, talking to friends across the country who are into that sort of thing, that technology is getting better. The key will be, again, how do you capitalize on that technology? This is step number one, putting all of these scores, putting all of these streams, putting all of these match schedules in one location. And of course, you know, will there be shows perhaps highlighting the matches you should follow most closely throughout the course of the year? Yeah, we're going to keep doing that here at Crack Rackets. And of course, getting Jay on board, that means we're going to get to go twice a week. We're going to have to talk women's on Tuesdays, men's on Thursdays. Maybe we'll switch the days sometimes. Obviously, Jay is going to get to come on those Thursday shows as well now too. I just
waiting for the invite.
No, I just don't want to load you up too early.
I just want to Zoom bomb.
I know.
You know, don't tell them. They won't listen to this, so don't tell them. I'll just show up.
We should have had you. So we recorded our Virginia episode. I won't say where they're on in our preseason rankings, although maybe we'll get there. Did we talk about it already on a show? You know where they are. So yeah. I can say it, I guess, on this show. They were number six on our rankings, and we recorded that recently. We're a little bit ahead. But we should have had you pop in on that one, because from here on in, it's just going to be anarchy. Like, oh my gosh, was that show enjoyable? And like looking at the rosters moving forward, it's going to be that same conversation over and over again. So pick a team in the top five that you want to jump in on. And yeah, you're jumping in on it just to throw them all off guard. It will be very, very enjoyable. But, you know, to put a bow, because obviously we congratulate where we can congratulate. And this is step number one. Talk to me about 2, 3, and 4. I know you think about these things. You know, for us, when we do Red Zone broadcasts, one of the things we really would love to do this year, and we're trying to figure out the technology, but it's like if we could have the ESPN bottom line, right, where you have scores just constantly updating, 1-0 Michigan, Wisconsin after the doubles point. Next, we'll go to the matches in the ACC, and you know, then we'll go to what's happening in the SWAC. We'll go to what's happening across the country, all these different things. That's a technology thing, and I think that's the next level. But, you know, again, 2, 3, and 4, what do you want to see?
2, 3, and 4 is subsequent to this.
Steps, yeah, exactly.
Well, I mentioned this earlier. I mean, the next step on this is a unified view of schedules.
Sure.
Right? And that's really kind of one of the main pain points. We've had some of the non-ITA resources in the past. The live stream consolidation, I think, could be very helpful. Right, if you're sitting down as a fan on a Friday when the SEC is in action, I think we've all had that experience where you're tabbing between, trying to keep track of several matches, right? Knowing where you should be focused. So if you can have a consolidated view of like, these are the matches in progress and these are the ones that you should be tuning into, and just the consolidation of the links, right? Like, no one's expecting the ITA necessarily to solve for one home to watch it all. Maybe that happens from somebody else, but at least just a consolidation of like, where can you get this information? Because I do think that ability to just say, hey, I want to follow, or maybe I'm following this match of this team I care about. What are the other matches that are happening that I might have a vested interest in? And right now there's no way to necessarily do that. I also think there could be a better way to inform non-butt-in-seat fans about the streaming opportunities, right? I'm not sure we do have enough fans who are aware that streaming is on PlaySight just because it's not on these more typical streaming networks.
Or Track Tennis.
Or Track Tennis. Great video quality. right, so I think the next step really is some of these streaming partners, whether that be the conference providers or other opportunities, whether it's YouTube or things like that, just for fans to be able to go and stream these matches and know that that's an option.
Yeah, and obviously, look, there are conferences, particularly Power 5 conferences, with rights that they don't own, you know, to bundle. For instance, last year with the SEC, we could not include them in our Red Zone coverage because the SEC tennis rights were folded into the ESPN broader SEC network rights, and ditto for Texas matches. Everything's on Longhorn Network and, you know, ACC's an ESPN entity as well. And so, look, we have continued, I can say, at Crack Rackets to work at. That was the most Midwestern Crack Rackets that's come out of me in a while. I apologize. And I knew it as I was saying it. It's late here on the East Coast. You're going to hear the true me speak. But I know we're working on those things. I know the ITA is working on those things. And, you know, getting college tennis, at least for now, as little behind a paywall as possible, so that as many people can see it, so that perhaps, you know, again, if there are 100,000 people watching college tennis, if you do a red zone streaming service that you're asking people to pay for, well, now it's worthwhile, because that's a consolidated product, that's a value added product, that's something a bit different. But sometimes we're not even at that stage yet. Sometimes it's still first awareness about all of these different streams existing. And again, making as many college or broadly tennis fans who, you know, Championship Sunday is really cool. You get to see a bunch of finals, but then there's 12 hours left in the day. And you know what's every Sunday from January to May? College tennis. It's like, I agree, it's a marketing thing, as you've heard me stress in the Power 5 interviews. But I think the ITA is, I think all trends, and obviously I'm a bit biased here in the circle, let's be clear. I always feel like the need now to express that to the listeners. But I know progress is being made. Third-party-ish perspective, final word goes to you.
Yeah, well, I think you brought up the awareness piece. For anyone who's been following my late night tweets, I've rebranded to J Tweets Volleyball.
And who isn't?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Sometimes those Pacific times don't resonate with our East Coast audience. But, you know, this past Saturday, just great anecdote here. This past Saturday night, I turn on Hulu like anyone does. And all of a sudden, it's like, live now, right? And it was on ESPN3 or something. It was volleyball. So I'm like, oh, college volleyball on Hulu. This is great. I click in, most electric crowd I've ever seen, packed stadium. And that's just, we can get into like what the butts in seat looked like and the product that they offer, which is fantastic. But that's just a great example of like, I wouldn't have tuned in if it wasn't presented to me as a streaming option. And so proliferating those options and making them available for more people is going to be super important moving forward.
Yeah, brilliantly said. And again, that is a developing story here at Cracked Rackets that we hope to have add a fun element to for all of you listeners, all of you college tennis fans over the next couple of weeks. But with that in mind, the breadcrumbs have been laid. So Jay, we have reached number 4 on our list, and it's always worth reexamining, you know, the tiers that we have these teams in entering this sort of top 10 preseason ranking. And, you know, we love tiers here at Crack Rackets, T-I-E-R-S, not T-E-A-R-S, just to be clear. But, you know, we talked about this in our conversations when we came up with our top 10, and it does feel like, you know, when we look at number 4, UCLA, that this is, you know, the end of that second tier. We're not quite at the championship level tier, but we're looking at a team that obviously has a ton of talent on the roster. And when you look at what this team was able to accomplish during the 2021 season, this was a team that goes 22-5 overall throughout the course of the season. And you look who the losses were to, you know, to Texas and at Pepperdine 4-3, at Cal 4-3. They lose, you know, 4-2. Cal was really the one team had their number. You know, Cal and Pepperdine are four of their 5 losses. And then the other one is National Championship Texas. So when 3 of your losses are to the 2 teams that play in the NCAA final, and, you know, 2 of those losses to the NCAA finalists are 4-3, it talks about how good that team was last season. That said, you know, even bringing back Abby Forbes, even bringing back, you know, Vanessa Ong, Sasha Vagramov, some of the talented players, they do Taylor Johnson to their roster. I still do feel like, again, and we don't know about Alicia Bolton. We'll talk about that later, I'm sure, in this podcast. But I don't know. Like, I'm not, despite the talent this team brings back, I still think they're a tier 2 team. And this is the end of that tier.
This is 100% the end of that tier. I read about this in the article that number 4 is anyone's guess, right? Mm-hmm. We have our 3 teams that we feel really good about that are solidly sitting atop there. And number 4 could really be any of the teams that we've already talked about. The reason I think we landed on UCLA was, one, for just some respect for their 2021 campaign, which we'll get into. I mean, they were knocking on the door. They were really that close. And they were really that good last season. I think second, You know, you look at some of their returners, particularly if we're making the assumption that Bolton does come back. You know, it's a similar to a Virginia situation, right? Where you have a really strong top of the lineup, and you need a few other players to crack. And you're taking a bet on, you know, three blue chip recruits that they've brought in as freshmen, that there's high upside there. And so I write about this in the article, like, why UCLA at four? And, you know, the response is, well, why not? And so that's where we landed. But yeah, this is the end of kind of that tier two.
Well, even the teams we're going to be talking about moving forward, and that includes Pepperdine, and that includes, I think at this point you guys are aware, Texas, UNC. Shocker. Like, as good as Navarro and Subash are, if Alicia Bolton comes back, it's Navarro, Subash, excuse me, and I guess we don't know about Stanford, but it's going to be Navarro, Subash, and then Forbes Bolton as your top twos. And, like, those are your sure things. You feel damn good about both Abby Forbes and Alicia Bolton. And you're right. That is, you know, the foundation of a great team. And, yes, they have the pieces on paper. When you get three blue chips to fill in the bottom of your lineup, you think one of them's probably going to click, and you feel pretty good about one of those bottom parts of the position of the lineup. And then, of course, you still have players like Ong, like Vagramov, like, you know, a Taylor Johnson to fill in elsewhere as well. And I don't want to forget Caroline Goldberg on the roster as well. Just, again, all of these returners to help bring these freshmen along. It's a good blend of talent. That said, let's talk about the 2021 team before we look closer at 2022, because you look at 2021. I mean, you know, I've talked about it before. I think UNC would have won the 2020 NCAA title running away. I think that team was that good compared to the field. But I also think UCLA was so clearly the second best team compared to everyone else, and just the top three of Forbes, Bolton, Hart, so talented. And at that 2020 indoors, you saw that group, you know, separate themselves from the rest of the pack. This year's team still had that. And you look at the top of the lineup, 21-3 for Abby, 21-3 at number one, Abby Forbes 20-2. You know, 16-2 at the number two singles position. Jada Hart goes 8-2. Alicia Bolton 4-0. Abby Forbes 1-0, the rep she had to play there. The biggest what if for this season, for this UCLA team, is, you know, what happens if Alicia Bolton never gets hurt? What happens if Alicia Bolton doesn't step on a ball and she's able to be healthy from the start of the season to the finish line? Because, to be honest, 22-5, again, you feel like you could have removed those two losses to Cal, and this would have been a 24-3 team with, like, just like that. And then a healthy Alicia Bolton, who's to say they don't beat Pepperdine once? Who's to say what that confidence does at the beginning, you know, to beat Pepperdine at the start of the year if Bolton's healthy, when that Pepperdine team had not clicked like they had by the end of the season? If UCLA wins that one match, they could be the number two. You know, all the seeds are different, and the entire NCAA board is shifted, and that NCAA board shifting would undoubtedly, you know, the fact that Texas got to avoid UNC, Pepperdine, and UCLA on their run to the final, that's not to diminish what NC State did, because NC State was excellent. But they got to avoid the three pedigree teams. That made a difference in the end. Like, those Texas freshmen got to run up that confidence throughout that NCAA tournament. And I just feel like, again, it was kind of, as good as 22-5 sounds for UCLA, feels like 2021 was kind of a what-if season.
Could not agree more. I mean, basically took the words out of my mouth. I mean, it just felt like they just could not catch a break all season, right? You talk about the Bolton injury. I mean, she got injured at the end of February, was out basically 6 weeks, the end of February and then the first week in April. Two of those five losses came without Bolton. And then, unfortunately, when she came back, you know, she slotted down to the three position, which worked out for a little bit, and then a little bit faltered down the home stretch. And so you think, with the continuity, the UCLA has been a very strong doubles team, right? They've had Bolton and Hart, the top of the lineup. Forbes is strong. You know, so you had to take Bolton out of doubles. And to come back after the injury, had she been healthy the whole season, you got to think UCLA has a ton of different momentum. When that draw came out and it was 4-5 UCLA and Pepperdine, I think everyone was thinking that's it's a tough draw for both of those teams. So I couldn't agree more. I'd love to ask you, because you pose this question sometimes, if the 2021 tournament gets replayed 100 times, How many times do you think UCLA comes away with a championship, if at all?
That's such a good – Jay, this is why Chris, Matt, move over. Holy Trinity out, dynamic duo in. I can go a step further. They had set point in doubles at the number one spot. Jada Hart and Abby Forbes over Ashley Leahy and Lisa Czar. One of the most dramatic tiebreakers I have ever seen.
I mean, it was like five or six. Minimum four.
Or were they up 6-1 or 6-2 or something crazy?
They were up 6-2 for sure. And then it was like 10-8 finish. So they had and they drop it.
So literally, they win that. Yep. It's a brand new ball game. And to answer your question, if you play the NCAA tournament, here's the thing though. UNC beats UCLA every time. UNC does not beat Pepperdine every time, because the UCLA matchup, with all due respect, the depth that UNC had, I just think Crawley at six, you mark up as a win. I think, you know, respectfully at number five, well, five gets interesting. It just depends who's healthy. But I also think the top two, I mean, the thing is, I was at UNC UCLA and I watched what Graham and Davitella did to Forbes and Bolton and just, you know, how well they were playing. And I think that UNC team had already seen UCLA. They had already beaten UCLA. There just wasn't a fear of that team.
It's a year and a half though, right?
Yeah. And I say they beat them every time. That's a stretch. I apologize to all the UCLA fans who just gave me the middle finger. There are absolutely scenarios where UCLA on the right day could have beaten UNC. I just think Pepperdine was a different foe, and there was a belief to that Pepperdine. This is not a quantifiable thing, but if you were just there, like, again, there was something about this Pepperdine team by the end, that the way they racked up these 4-3 wins, that just there was a confidence to them in those final stages that would never be duplicated. Like, you could not make that run up. And, you know, it's hilarious because I'm sure when I talk to Pear for the Pepperdine pod, I'll ask the highs of the Leahy Czar semifinal in doubles to the lows of the Leahy Czar finals in doubles. Mm. Like, how did those two things resonate in your mind? And he'll hang up on me on that moment. But, like, to your point, and we're bringing it back to UCLA here, yes. Like, yes, there's a world where, and I think this team could, you know, that was hyperbole. They could have beaten UNC. They absolutely could have beaten Texas. And, you know, I was talking to one Pac-12 coach about this season, and he talked about the parity, and he's like, you look at the strength at the top of the Pac-12, Stanford's back, USC's loaded, and just, like, all of these different teams. Cal's going to be really good. They're all going to be better. But last year, this was the team in the Pac-12, and it just felt like in another world where they're healthy, they rip off an undefeated stretch. Maybe they beat Texas as the more experienced team at the national indoors, and that was a really good match, although Texas was really damn good. Like, that might have been tough for this UCLA team. That's another thing. Could they have done it three times in a row? I don't know. But yes, like, this team was really – and you forget about – like, look at the numbers. I mean, Viv Wolf at four was rock solid for this team. You look for her overall, 10-5 at that number four singles position. That's the flight with the lowest win percentage on the team. Like, they had the goods. 20-4 at six singles. You know, 14-5 at five. They were 11-8 at three, 15-7 at four. That is a direct byproduct, respectfully, of just not having a healthy Bolton.
Yep. So what's the number?
How many times do they win it if you play 100? Three.
Three? Wow.
Is that more or less than you expected?
That's less than I had.
Would you have said once?
It's the lead. No, that's less than I had. I had more than that.
I got you.
It's the lead in my article.
A good lead, Jay.
So you can check that out.
All right, so give me the numbers. Let's do this tangent. You play it 100 times. Mm-hmm. Who wins the plurality? Does anyone get a majority?
So let's set the guardrails. Are we keeping the same draw?
Has to be the same draw.
I think you made a really good point. That's a very favorable draw for Texas.
Yeah. Because they get to the final, in my opinion, 99% of the time. NC State beats them once where they finish off a doubles point and, like, they just have this perfect run. But sure. I think they get their 99%, and when you look at a 538 model, if you have a more likely chance to get to the final, you're more likely to probably win that championship.
Exactly, right? And you're fresh, right? And one of UNC, Pepperdine, UCLA got to go through the gauntlet of that. So I think Texas, obviously, they won. I would say that that's the winning team the majority of the time, but a very slight majority, right? I think you're looking at like 55%. Mm-hmm. I think the next team, I think it's probably UNC. Mm-hmm. Who wins
I
that?
Agree.
Yeah, 100%. Who wins that? And then I would go Pepperdine, and then I would go UCLA. Yeah. So that's the order. I would say UNC 25% of the time.
I'd go a little higher on them. But
then you're going like, if you go 35, I was going to go 35%, and that's what we're 90% already.
Yeah, but I think, so I take a little way. I'd say Texas 48, UNC 40%. I can't believe UNC didn't win last year's national title. I know, that's a team. Well, it's so interesting. If you, well, 40% might be too high. You're right, 35, I'll say. And then you divide the rest up between Pepperdine. And, I mean, everything but number one doubles in the final went right for Pepperdine. Like, everything but 1 point. And that made the difference. You've seen what the perfect hand looks like for a Pepperdine team, essentially. Yep. The others, I think you saw what a really good Texas performance looks like. I don't think we saw the best version of UNC, and we know it's out there. That's why I would skew a little bit higher. We're full on into this tangent now, so I got to ask. Same thing, 2019 men. Wake Forest, Florida, Texas, and whomever Wake Forest beat in the semifinals.
So,
who was it? It wasn't Virginia.
No, that was the quarterfinals.
Semifinal. Yeah. They beat some. Oh, UNC.
It was the Blumberg match. Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
because Texas might actually be like the perfect. Like, are they the lowest in this scenario?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, are they 3 or 4?
Yeah, because Petros and Borna were done. Because they were just cooked. It was just like, we got nothing left in the tank.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's tough. I would say
Florida was so young, but like
I probably go Wake, Florida.
I know Wake you want to say UNC. Say
I
it.
Know, but they
Will
were,
was not
they
healthy.
Were, yeah, I was gonna say they were kind of limping into that as well. So probably a tie between UNC and Texas. And that was probably another draw situation, right? You just look at the.
I would say same thing, by the way, 2014 NCAA men, and you could go through history and do this with a lot, but like USC winning that title and not UCLA, who had beaten them a bunch, and not Virginia, who had Damajan, Frank, and all the Kwiatkowski class, like not Oklahoma, who had, you know, the first of three and had Axel and, you know, Dane and Guillermo Acosta, or not Acosta, Alcada, excuse me, or whatever it was. I'm close on the name. Wow, I really am getting old. It's been like over a decade. Cut me some slack. Or around a decade. But anyways, those are some of the fun what ifs.
Yeah. We can segue 2014. Fun fact. That was my graduation from UVA. So I drove down from Virginia to Athens. That's the only tournament I've missed the first few rounds.
Yeah.
The first round I show up for is the semifinal. It's the only one I could make one, so that was crushing. But you know who did win the 2014 women's final?
Hold on. Let me think. USC wins. I'm going to say Stanford.
No, our number four.
Oh, UCLA. Duh, that was the Brady team. I mean, not the Brady team, but she was on it. Yeah,
she was on that in 2015 team, yep.
Yeah, good call. You're right. Damn. You were at that match? So did you see the Honoffman pass?
I saw it all. I think these things are a little bit more clear in your memory than they are mine. You'll get there when you hit the 3-0 Gruskin, but it was a heartbreaking one.
Yeah,
there was a lot of rain that year too.
At this point, it's just because there's a finite amount of space in every brain, right? And it's just like I don't have enough serious things in my life to start filtering out the unserious things, and so I still have room for the unserious things. But all right, with all that said, you look at this UCLA team. The fact that we did that what if, I hope, is a testament to the fact that we are emphasizing how good this team was in 2021. 22-5 overall, 10-0 it says in the conference, but obviously they had some losses to Cal pre-conference. conference play beginning, they lose to
and
them
post.
In the conference.
Yeah, so that's just their regular season record.
Exactly, in the conference tournament as well. Now, again, we read the singles records. They win over 74% of their matches in four of the six singles flights, 68% at four, 58% at three. They were excellent at doubles all year long, winning over 78% of their matches at all three flights. Of course, they're unable to get that doubles point against Pepperdine. And
Look,
I love I know Jada Hart. I know that's a volley she will think about. Because she had it, and I had someone tell me they thought Jada Hart, her last 2 years of college, was the best player in college tennis when she wanted to be. That's a testament to, obviously, her contributions to this team. You look at some of the other contributions they got last year from seniors like, you know, an Abby Altick, who has a fantastic year for the Bruins and goes, you know, is able to contribute in a pinch. And you've got, you know, other people as well, Annette Golick, who has another fantastic season for the Bruins as she goes, I believe, 18-3 overall in dual matches. Again, Vivian Wolf coming over from Georgia, able to fill in the middle of their lineup. But look, Wolf gone, Hart gone, Golick gone, you know, Altick gone. Though that was the bottom of their lineup last year. That was the nucleus of the team. And when you look towards this 2022 season, you know, again, what do you make of the roster? Give me the breakdown, Jay.
Yeah, so it kind of breaks into three pieces, right? You have these so I will say I am operating under the assumption that Bolton does return. We should note that she took the fall off. So she played about, I think, 14 25Ks across Europe and the U.S., her best result being a semifinal in the singles there. She did win two doubles titles. But, you know, she's cracked kind of the top 600 WTA. But by and large, I mean, she was falling in the qualifying. I'm not sure why she wouldn't return for this final season. So I'm operating under that assumption. I have no reason to believe that she's not, other than the fact that she's not on the roster right now, which we should caveat.
Yeah. Which is a big caveat, by the way. Let's be clear.
Huge.
Yeah.
So I want to make that assumption very clear. So with that assumption that you're going to have Forbes and Bolton at the top of the lineup, you have this, you know, middle group of returners in Bagramov, Ong, and Johnson. And then you have kind of the new freshmen, right? I mentioned the three blue chip recruits. And so the big questions kind of come into play with those, you know, middle of the lineup returners and the freshmen. And so it was interesting, a fun stat for you that made examining the roster pretty difficult here. UCLA only played 38 singles matches this fall. That's about 2.5 times less than the average team in our Cracked Rackets top 10. So the average is much closer to about 100. So we didn't see a lot of fall play from the Bruins. So it's tough to know exactly where, you know, Vagramov or Ong's level is at, and certainly where these freshmen are. I mean, each of them only played about 5 or 6 singles matches. So really tough to gauge kind of their respective levels right now.
Yeah, and obviously that's something we will have to monitor early in the season with this team. What does this lineup actually look like? Now, of course, it helps to bring back someone in Abby Forbes who, I believe, what is she in the preseason rankings? I want to say 40-ish, I don't know, something like that.
Well, preseason she was 2.
Oh, yeah, sorry, in these final rankings, 40-ish or something like that.
I think she's much lower than that.
Yeah, point being, she was a preseason, though, top 10 player. We know, you know, throughout her college tennis career how successful she has already been, and there's no, you know, despite an up-and-down fall, not the best results for her in college tennis, more down than up, if we're being honest. I have no doubt about her level, that she will be back competing with the best of the best in college tennis come the start of the dual match season. And look, that gives you a lot of comfort as your, you know, coach Stella Sampras Webster trying to make this lineup and trying to figure out who goes where. It always helps to know, well, at least we've got Abby at one. But you're right, there's so much else unknown about the rest of this team. And when you start to look at the returners, I suppose you start with Sasha Vagramov, who had a big fall. 7-2 overall here to end the season. And obviously last year she's someone who goes 9-5 and, you know, contributed mostly at the 5-6 singles position. It would be great if you can get a big jump from her. And having seen her play, you know, 5-10, I know the sort of power tennis she's capable of playing. feels like that's, you know, it feels like for sure Vagramov finds her way into the lineup. Obviously, Vanessa Ong last year, 5-1 in the dual matches she played, but was never really healthy. It just felt like never was able to quite find her rhythm. We know how talented she is. That's the thing, and that's what makes this team so interesting. And very similar to Virginia, there's a lot of talent at the top. There's a lot of pedigree elsewhere in the lineup, but that pedigree hasn't always come in college tennis. It's a fascinating lineup, and again, it's a fascinating roster. I'm curious, how do you think, from a talent perspective, do you have the UTR metrics? I'm not sure if you've brought them up already at this point. I'm sure you anticipate me asking. How does this team compare?
I do. I do have them. And they were surprisingly high, given kind of the roster turnover that we talked about. So they have a power six of 64.36, which for context is second in the Pac-12 to USC by 0.07. Okay. So very close to USC. Obviously, it's buoyed by having Forbes and Bolton at the top there. But even Ong, Kimmy Hance, Taylor Johnson, these are all players that are over 10-5, and so contributing to that. And just for comparison, like, how does that stack up to like a UNC? It's about 0.5 lower than UNC, and a little bit more than that for Texas. So surprisingly fairly high and pretty strong.
Yeah, and you mentioned it. Only 38 singles matches for the group here this fall. That's a low number given the relative inexperience of this team, and that's something obviously I will ask their coach about. Now, you look from the doubles perspective, 14-5 certainly sounds good, and you look for them. They played 9 different doubles pairings to accumulate that 14-5 record. Now, no team played more than 4 matches together, but... Yeah. You know, I do think this team has a lot of, you know, Coach Sampras Webster, and just, again, the team in general, they've always been good at doubles. They've always, you know, UCLA teams have always brought the good on that point. I think they've got all the talent there, the pieces together to be a top doubles point come the end of the season. But, I mean, when you talk about the freshmen, you know them better than I do. You look at this recruiting class, and obviously they were a highly touted recruiting class, according to our friends at tennisrecruiting.net. I believe number 5 in 2021. They bring in 3 blue chippers, Ava Catanzarite, not Catanzariti. I don't think that's not like a Safin Safina thing, I don't think. Kimberly Hance, who, of course, I believe sister of Connor Hance, I want to say.
Yep.
And Elise Waggle as well.
Yep.
You know, 3 blue chips, number 5 class. Talk to me about the freshmen.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely be curious to get Coach Sampras Webster's thoughts on the playing of this fall. I think doubles is not something to take much or read into much. I mean, neither Forbes nor Bolton are figures in those pairings, so you got to expect. I mean, you're going to feel good about doubles because you're going to have Bolton at one position, and you're going to have Forbes at another, and you just got to find one more. And so the 3 freshmen are interesting. I did expect to see them play more of this fall just to get more reps in. As you mentioned, only a handful of matches for the 3 of them. Interestingly, we've talked a lot about these freshmen who have come in as highly touted recruits. None of these 3 have significant international experience. So none of them played much on the ITF circuit, really just focused on the U.S. tournaments. I would say... In general, Kimmy Hance probably had the better junior career, but it's actually been Elise Waggle who I think has had a little bit more of an impressive start to the year. She was the one that went 4-1 this fall. She had kind of a surprisingly high UTR. She's a 10-4. Kimmy Hance is a 10-5. So to be honest, there's not much dividing these 3 freshmen, which was a little bit of a bummer because I was hoping to see more data this fall to kind of distinguish between the 3 and make some predictions. But it's going to be tough, and we're going to learn a lot more about this team in the early goings of January.
Well, with that in mind, I'm going to make it tough on you now. Anyways, let's talk possible lineups. Let's talk possible predictions. Give me what it has by UTR, then give me what you expect to see. And let's start with Bolton in the lineup.
Yep. So by UTR, it'd be Forbes, Bolton, Ong, Kimmy Hance, Taylor Johnson, and Elise Waggle.
Interesting. No Vagramov on that list.
Nope.
Obviously, a couple of the other freshmen missing as well. That's interesting.
Yeah, Vagramov would be 7.
Interesting.
Vanessa Ong's UTR feels really high to me, given how little she's played over the last 12 months. Mm-hmm. And she hasn't played much this fall either. So That's what UTR has. I think what I would have is Forbes, Bolton, and then I think you got to have Vagramov at three. She's the one with the most experience in the singles lineup thus far. And then I think it's a rat race at the bottom three between Vanessa Ong and the three freshmen. So however that kind of pans out, I think you'll see a mix of those. And I do think Taylor Johnson will continue to contribute in doubles, which she has in the past few years.
Yeah. The one thing you do say about this team, look, they're – you know, 8-9 players. That's really, though, that's the rotation. It's really eight, and you wonder, you know, if there's an injury. Yeah, obviously, that would be a big impact on this team. The other thing you worry about, what if Bolton doesn't come back? And I am curious, if you remove Bolton from this equation, does this UCLA roster, in your mind, still stay top 10?
So, a few questions in there. Okay. I think, first, it's interesting you mentioned that around the depth. And the injuries, because I actually feel good about this team if they do get injured, because I feel like their 7 and 8 are basically the same level as their 5 and 6.
Sure.
Right? I think you have like 6 players competing for 4 spots, the bottom of that lineup. Where you get really worried is when there's kind of a precipitous drop between 6, 7, and 8. Okay. But obviously, if they were to lose Forbes or Bolton to injury like they did last season, that's a new ball game. Or to your second question, if they lose Bolton to turning pro, where does this team land? And I write about this in the article. I see a lot of parallels in this team between their 2016 season.
Interesting.
And that was off the heels of their NCAA title in 2014, and then their runner-up finish in 2015. And then they lost, you know, they lost Jen Brady to turning pro, and they lost Chanel Van Wyn and Robin Anderson. And it was the first time that 2016 season, after that sort of roster turnover, that they didn't make the round of 16 since the 90s. Mm-hmm. And I think this team is walking a fine line. And I think if Bolton doesn't come back, it's very reminiscent of what you saw in 2016, because that would be two of their top three not returning and a whole host of their bottom of the lineup. I think if Bolton comes back and she plays, she's a linchpin both in singles and doubles. But if she doesn't come back, no, this is not a top 10 team.
I agree. I think that's the concern. And when I said injury, I should have said top end injury. It feels like you take out Bolton, you take out Forbes. There's a lot of inexperience on this roster. And by the way, we said the same thing about Virginia last week. Like, I like to think we're being consistent here, but you know, the difference is we know Navarro's back. We know Subash is back. We actually don't know if Bolton is back. That said, you do like the options for this team at 5, 6. You feel like they can find that depth. They really just need one of those freshmen to click, and then one of Vagramov and Ong to click, and you can find your way to 4 points with a couple different paths, assuming they continue their forever trend of being successful at doubles. And I mean, look, possible lineups, I think you nailed it. Like, I might go Ong over Vagramov to start the season, but I go, you know, Forbes, Bolton, in whatever order, who's ever playing better, Ong, freshman, Vagramov, freshman. And that's probably what I do.
I just don't think we've seen enough from Ong.
Yeah. I think when she's been healthy, she's been very good.
I know, but it's been, I mean, wasn't healthy in the spring, and she hasn't been healthy in the fall.
Yeah.
I also think, I mean, Vagramov, she's a 5'10 lefty.
Yeah,
right,
you like that. You're right.
Right, like you got to put her up at the top of the lineup and let her hit her serve, hit her forehand. Ong is going to win you matches at the bottom of the lineup.
True. I guess it's both ways. It's you let them cook. One of them's going to be cooking at the bottom of the lineup to start the year. So that's probably
who do you feel better about winning at a 5 or 6 position than, you know,
Vagramov over Ong. I feel better at Vagramov's level right now, just right now.
Well, level, yeah, but I think I would be concerned about the volatility with Vagramov.
Okay. Fair.
And she's, I mean, you look at her fault, those, she's 7 wins, pretty straightforward. Those 2 losses, absolute blowouts.
You might have convinced me, Jay. You might have convinced me. That's a fair point. All right, well then, yeah, I think that's the potential lineup. Too early to say what the doubles is, but you get Forbes in a line and a half of a slot. You get Bolton in half of a slot. Yep. You get Vagramov in half of a slot. You feel pretty good. Taylor Johnson's been really successful in doubles throughout her career. And again, you feel really good about the pieces you have there. Now you look at the schedule for this UCLA team. Well, I guess let's talk about it, and we've alluded to it. Well, yeah, you sort of nailed it there. If this, and you just said it, but just to put a bow on this conversation, I apologize. If Bolton's not in the lineup, it's a completely different conversation because Cal is very good. USC is very good. We've obviously already talked about how good Stanford can be as well. Those are three teams who can just, without Bolton, straight up beat this team, 1 through 6. Like, they have the talent, they have the depth, and they have some added experience in places UCLA doesn't, that sans Bolton makes this season very, very hard. And I like the 15-16 comparison, where I think back-to-back years they dropped, they didn't make the round of 16. I think they went second round in back-to-back years.
Yep.
I don't think that's the two-year forecast for this team.
No.
But given the depth in college tennis, given how difficult that schedule is going to be, because, again, they're going to have to play USC a bunch of different times. They're going to have to play Cal a bunch of different times. Stanford's on the schedule, of course. Pepperdine on the schedule twice already. And I believe it's a home and away in those two matches. And for fans, we love that. And long term, this UCLA team could be a lot better come May than perhaps they are in January. Now, it helps kickoff weekend. It's a favorable draw, and you're always – you know, you never want to make the choice, I suppose, to go head to UCLA, face that gauntlet. But Washington, Denver, Cal Poly, that probably is a good break for this young team, who, by the way, again, worth mentioning, is going to play Pepperdine before, I believe, the ITA National Indoor before the National Indoor Final 16 would field together in Madison, Wisconsin. So I like the schedule construct. This team's going to get tested. It's going to have opportunities to get better. Let's make some predictions. Talk to me about the conference. Talk to me about nationally. What do you expect from this team?
Yeah. Well, the first thing I'll say is that if Bolton doesn't come back, then UCLA is our Wake Forest of last year. So I wanted to get that in and be on the record there. I think you hit it on right. Like, this team is going to be much better in May. They have the favorable draw. The kickoff weekend would not surprise me for this team to take some lumps at the indoors, just given the inexperience that they have at the roster and kind of relying on those freshmen. It's going to be a gauntlet of a Pac-12. Throw in Pepperdine, which is basically, for all intents and purposes, now like Pac-12 adjacent. It feels like all these Pac-12 teams are scheduling them. It's tough to say, right? Sitting here today, this is probably the biggest question mark team in our top 10, just to know where their level is at. I do think from a regular season Pac-12, I think those four teams that you mentioned beat each other up. They do now play the Pac-12 tournament. So I think this UCLA team, I know they're our four team, but I probably have them losing the semifinals. To some of these other Pac-12 teams, and I think they fall in the round of 16.
Wow, Jay, I like it. I mean, look, I already have my four quarterfinalists, top three plus Stanford, so I think nationally, or semifinalists, excuse me, so nationally, obviously, from prediction standpoint, I think quarterfinals is the peak for this team. There's definitely a world where, you know, again, Bolton doesn't come back and they get an injury to one of the freshmen, or Ong or Vagramov, and this team will take some lumps. And it's a really tough schedule. Again, Pac-12, there's a lot of depth this season. Cal is going to be really good. USC dominates the fall. We talked about Stanford. I know I just repeated that point, but like, you look overall, and again, total matches, they play one of USC or Pepperdine, Cal, or Stanford, I believe, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 matches this year. 7 matches against those four schools.
Like, plus 1 or 2 in the tournament.
Yeah, now you go 3 and 4 in that stretch, you're going to be a top 16 seed. You're going to, filter near the top 8. You go 4 and 3 in those matches, you're going to be a top 8 seed. And given the round of 16 super regional returning, that's invaluable to this UCLA roster. That said, there's also a world where that young team takes a couple lumps against Stanford and, you know, gets knocked off by an experienced SC team, you know, in a free-for-all between a bunch of youngsters. Cal knocks them off again after having their number last season. There's a world where all of those things happen. And you're right. Like, I think the floor for this UCLA team, you know, again, is the Pac-12 going to get 3 top 16 seeds? Like, is there a world where SC, Cal, and UCLA, you're shaking your head, yes.
Top
I agree
16?
With you.
Yes.
But I should have said, excuse me, 3 top 8 seeds? Like, no. I think there's only one in the bunch. And so, well, and Stanford, you throw in 2, 4 top 16 seeds, yes. But are they going to get 2 top 8 seeds? Like, I don't know. And you're right. Round of 16, just from a scheduling standpoint, because you have the West Coast powerhouses that are all playing, round of 16 feels very much in play. How many quarterfinalists have I used?
You've used four.
Okay. On Georgia?
No,
Georgia was round of 16.
Your quarterfinalists are Ohio State, Texas A&M, Stanford, and UVA.
Okay, Stanford doesn't count. I'll use my last one on UCLA. I'll cash in. Give me that UCLA quarterfinal spot. It's hard to pick. Do I leave one for the unknown soldier? No, you said round of 16. That's your bold take. We should disagree. I like your take. I'll take quarterfinals. I'm going to justify this top four ranking. But I do think it's a really tough schedule for the Bruins here this season. And, yeah, they're one of those swing teams to watch. But, again, with all that said, that's number four in our Cracked Rackets preseason women's rankings. UCLA women's team moving up on the list. It's going to be fascinating to watch the Bruins compete in 2022. Of course, if you want to hear more about them, hopefully I will have interviewed Coach Sampras Webster by the time this podcast comes out. You can hear that on the Cracked Interviews podcast, along with all of our other Power 5 interviews. You can, of course, learn more about this team on our Cracked Rackets YouTube video or by reading about them, as John Parsons, as he mentioned, has written about this roster, talked about the depth, explored all of these topics today and even further in his article. With that said, we've got three teams to go here on the women's side. Now, of course, at the end of all of these podcasts, I offer you the opportunity to discuss your number four men's team as well. Give me the reveal, Jay. Who is number four on your list?
You know, I always feel very prepared for these conversations, but you always get me with these men's ones. I always forget that we cover them. So my number four is Texas. Okay. And I have Texas is a lot like some of the teams we've talked about on the women's side, where the roster on paper is there, but the results over the fall have been very questionable, right? I was expecting a much bigger jump from Micah Braswell this fall that I didn't see. Same with Waldeeb. I thought he would finally be healthy. I know he struggled with injuries. Ciamara has not had the impact that I thought he would coming into the fall. Spazieri has obviously been injured, but seems like now that he's healthy, I mean, he made the semifinal of the 25K, so no concerns there. You know, you look at the freshmen that they're bringing in, Bally, you know, I mean, they return everybody, right? Yeah. So, you know, and you think they were battle tested last year. I mean, they were the king of the 4-3s. So you can't bump them down out of respect for what they did last year. Same roster. But they're not giving us a lot of evidence this fall, at least, to convince that they're ready to repeat.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm going to reference this constantly in the podcast, so I'll briefly try not to repeat myself here. But like, everything broke right for them in 2021. Everything. It was, we talk about the best case scenario for Pepperdine at the NCAA tournament. It was the best case scenario for Texas, period, throughout the 2021 season. Even if they just duplicate, the thing is, the depth they have is just crazy, but everyone has crazy depth. So the question is, how replicable is the success of Spazieri at one, who by the end of the season was as good as anyone at that spot? Waldeeb, Braswell, Harper, Huang. I mean, all of these new additions as well. It's the margins are so thin. So it's just like, does that 4-3 toughness matter? Or is it impossible to replicate that again in 2022? And is it a regress to the mean season, which is the difference between being number four and being number seven on this list? Like, that's what's so fascinating. That said, of course, we also have Texas, number four on our list. So we are now at the stage of agreement. It's going to be interesting to hear the top threes. I'm sure we'll have some disagreement there. But, yeah, again, Virginia's our number six. By the end of the pod, I was ready to have them number one. After reexamining everything and being like, wait a second, Botzer, Allen. Well, first of all, I think the Virginia bias has waned in me. Now, you'll hear in the episode, Chris and Matt treat it like it's an ex-girlfriend of mine that they like have to be tentative about bringing up. And I'm like, let's not be ridiculous, fellas. Yeah. But I just like – I mean, we're talking about Allen and Ross maybe, or like Getz and Ross versus Harper and Ciamara, or like Ciamara and one of the – like, God, are those matchups going to be good. Just get me – I mean, let's enjoy the 5 months, but NCAA quarterfinals, ITA quarterfinals, oh, my God, is that going to be good tennis?
Yeah, it is. I will say I will always be harsher on UVA just because of my bias. I feel like I, like, go over and I'm, like, harsher than maybe I should be. But, yeah, I mean, I'm just curious to see this Texas team in the spring. I think, like – individually, you know, the fall wasn't great from anyone, and so that's something that I found a little bit concerning. But I feel different than you about, like, everything breaking the right way. I agree that that happened, but I think that that's what you build on this season, right? That you're not going 4-3 with Oklahoma, you're not going 4-3 with Oklahoma State. Like, you're winning those 5-2, 6-1, you know, a year on. So, you know, we'll see. It's fascinating. That depth is going to be tough to deal with. And particularly, I mean, Spezieri is definitely an asset, both at one singles, and he's a damn good doubles player. So he'll be a huge asset.
You know why people accuse me of Virginia bias? Because I brought them up twice here on the UCLA pod. So you know what? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I should double down on it.
It's just the formative years.
Even bias. Exactly. It's just like, you don't understand. I have, like, a catalog of references, and 10% of them are Virginia related. Like, that's all I got. I'm sorry, folks. But no, I agree. And that's what makes this exercise so fun. It's what makes these conversations so fun. Again, if you've missed any of the conversations we've had so far, you can catch up on them all on our website, crackrackets.com. Of course, like, rate, subscribe, review to this podcast, the Cracked Interviews podcast, Mini Break podcast, and our Cracked Rackets YouTube channel. Of course, if you miss anything, you can catch up on it all on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. We are at Cracked Rackets. You want to message me directly, I am at Great Shot Pod. You want to message Jay directly, he's at JTweetsTennis, not at JVolleyballTweets, but you can find him there on
maybe
his
coming
burner.
Soon.
Yeah, exactly. Alt, yeah. Look for that burner moving forward. Of course, with that said, shout out as always to the super producer Daniel Westhoff for the of an editing job he does day in, day out, making all of this content possible. With all of that said, Jay, any final thoughts?
I mean, you've talked about the slim margins on the men's side. I mean, let's start hyping up the top three on the women's side, because it's going to be, you know, in a few intense conversations, I imagine. I'm super excited to break down our top three.
Yeah, now the fun really begins. But with all of that's not true. This was all really fun. But with all of that said, for my fantastic co-host, John Parsons, our super producers, Fliegner and Westhoff, and all of us here at both Cracked Rackets and the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. Jay, what do we tell our listeners?
Hey, great shot.
And we will see you all next week. Thanks, everyone.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.